We're in our sort of second last session of Discover Christmas. Tomorrow we're going to wrap this thing up and we're going to really discover Christmas tomorrow. But we've been walking through the story of Mary. And Mary had front row seats to the very first Christmas, the very first moment that Jesus was born. Mary was there. In fact, she was there with Jesus from 9 months previous to the first Christmas. Because Mary has this incredible story where an angel talks to her and says, Mary, you're going to have a baby. And we said in the first week that she went from reservation to anticipation. Where she wasn't really sure about this. She wasn't so sure. She was happy about that. But then the angel talked. She said, okay, well, I guess I'm the Lord's servant. And so she started anticipating and getting ready for what was about to happen in her life. But then we said in the second week that anticipation turned to celebration because she left and she went to Elizabeth's house. And remember the prophetic pregnant woman? Come on. She starts being prophetic over Mary and this celebration bursts out. Mary's singing for joy about what's going on with her and with this baby and with the first Christmas. And she's ready to discover Christmas. And she's celebrating. She stays with Elizabeth for 3 months until Elizabeth has her baby. And then Mary heads back. And last week, Pastor Allen was here. Anyone hear Pastor Allen preach? Come on. I actually watched the first one live from where I was. But he talked about the idea that Mary was going back and maybe relationships were going to be damaged here. How was she going to talk to Joseph about this? How was she going to deal with this with her family? I mean, yeah, God knows that this baby is from God, but how's anyone else going to believe that? How am I going to convince anyone else? And so with the fear of broken relationship in her heart, she headed back, and God was actually already reconciling her relationship with Joseph. God was speaking to him too. And so she came back, and actually part of every Christmas story is reconciliation. It's part of God's heart for when his son would come to this earth, reconciliation was going to start to happen. It did then and it should now. And so it went from reservation to anticipation to celebration. Celebration led to reconciliation. And then this week I want to talk about how reconciliation actually led into devastation. It's interesting how Christmas goes. That anytime we talk about Christmas and we try to celebrate all the things, and isn't it amazing what's going on, and isn't it amazing that Jesus came to this earth and we get to be happy, and some of your happiness has to do with feasts and food and making snacks and making decorations and doing all those great things with your family and doing all that. Some of you, that's your story at Christmas time. But for many people, and I hear it regularly as a pastor, for many people, when a time like Christmas shows up, it's actually a time where they're a little bit more devastated, where they're remembering who's not around the feast table, remembering who's not making cookies with them, even though they made them every year, remembering the relationships that are kind of broken, or the people that they've lost, or the money that they don't have anymore, or the kids that are not living the way they wish they were living anymore. All of that stuff comes to the front when you see all of these happy families doing all of this happy stuff at Christmas time. You can start to recognize that your life doesn't look a lot like theirs. Christmas sometimes has a way of illuminating the devastation within your life. I have some friends right now who are walking through a pretty crazy process. In fact, probably many of you have seen them on the news or seen their story covered or seen someone share it on Facebook. Their names are Clark and Kim, and their little guy, Ayo. And Clark's actually spoken here at this church before. But Clark and Kim, several months ago, they went to adopt a child, and they had been working on the process, doing the paperwork, doing all this stuff for the adoption for several years leading up to this. And they went to adopt the child. They did all of the things. They got all of the paperwork done, all of it through. And the government said, actually, no, we're not going to let you come back just yet. And so Clark and Kim pastor a church together in Abbotsford called Abbotsford Pentecostal Assembly. And so they were there together ready to adopt their child and bring him back in a couple weeks. And a couple weeks turned into a couple months. And so Clark had to come back home and take on some of the stuff at the church that needed to be taken on. And Kim stayed there. However, Kim struggles with MS. And so while she's there in a foreign country with her brand new baby, trying to get used to living with this brand new child, she has a flare-up with her MS. Clark's back home trying to pastor a church. His wife all of a sudden is in the hospital while their brand new son is being taken care of by their brand new friends in Africa. And Clark had to make the gut-wrenching, challenging decision where he said, it's time for me to go back to Africa and separate myself from my wife, and she's got to go back and recover in Canada. So now Kim is in Canada recovering from her MS. Clark has had to choose to either to leave their brand new son and come back and walk with his wife through that, or stay with his brand new son and let his wife be back here and walk through that on her own. They've had this terrible challenge with their family. They continue to walk in the tension, waiting for our government to release them to come back home. And as I've followed their story, it keeps saying, they keep over and over saying, let us be home together. People keep saying, bring AO home for Christmas. Bring them home for Christmas time. Let them be together for that season. Let them be together in that place. And I saw a story with Kim talking to an interviewer recently, and Kim's talking about this story, and she says, I don't even have the stockings up. I don't even have a Christmas tree. I there's nothing about this feels like Christmas. And again, you can just see that Christmas has a way of illuminating the pain in our lives as well as the joy in our lives. That you can imagine on that day, I'm praying hard for Clark and Kim, that Clark and Ayo would get to come home and they would get to be home for Christmas. And if that doesn't happen, on that day more than any other day, they'll recognize how much pain there is in their life. Isn't that true for so many people? On Christmas, that day more than any other day can be challenging. It's difficult. You wonder where God is on that day. God, if this is your birthday, if this is the birthday of Jesus, where are you? What are you doing? When are you going to break through for me? When are you going to change my devastation? When are you going to deal with my challenges? When are you going to deal with my difficulties? How am I supposed to see you in this time? How am I supposed to recognize you in this time? When are you going to move for me? When are you going to do something for me? When are you going to accomplish what needs to be accomplished? When are you going to heal this thing that I'm facing? When are you going to bring back the relationship that's broken? When are you going to restore me back to health? When are you going to deal with the pain from my loss? When are you going to help me, God? And Christmas, we can often say, God, when are you going to deal with this thing? When are you going to deal with the situation I'm facing? But discovering Christmas is not always just about God dealing with our devastation, but sometimes dwelling in our devastation. Not just him sorting it all out, but sometimes just him coming and being there with us. In fact, the name that the angel gave to Mary for what Jesus would be called, he said, this is Emmanuel, God with us. He didn't say this is Emmanuel, God who fights all your battles and makes everything feel perfect for you and then you're good with us. He says he's just going to be God with you. Yeah, but I'm dealing with stuff. Yeah, he'll be with you. But I'm facing things. He'll be with you. But my relationships aren't perfect. He'll be with you in them. Was he ever going to restore it? Yeah, though some of those might get restored. Some of those, that healing might come, and some of that may take place down the road. But in the meantime, he's with you. God recognized that the greatest thing that he could give us on Christmas time is not a solution to all of our problems, but his presence while we deal with them. That we could all of a sudden have him with us. And isn't it good to know that we're not the only ones who struggle with devastation at Christmas time? The very first Christmas had devastation. Mary had devastation in the very first Christmas, the very first time that she was about to experience the birth of Jesus. It was in terrible situation. We often think of that moment and go, oh, isn't it so cute? A nice little manger and Jesus in the cute little like food trough. Oh, that's so nice. And so it feels kind of nice to us from our nice, warm, cozy church looking at some rickety old manger. But Jesus was born in a manger in a barn, the Son of God. And we say, wow, the Son of God is great and he can do that. But imagine the mom. The mom thinking, I can't do anything better for my kid. Who am I? where is God? What's he going to do here? If this is actually the Son of God, why am I still being rejected by everyone around me? Why am I still facing all of this? The story of Christmas is not of all of Mary's problems finding a solution, but it's about Emmanuel, God coming with her in her challenges. That's great news. That's great news for us. Doesn't sound like North American great news sometimes, because we think great news means that everything is perfect in our lives. That's a lie. Everything can't be perfect in your life. This world is challenging sometimes. There's difficult things sometimes. In fact, I'm really glad that the first Christmas story wasn't about perfection. It wasn't like Mary got all dolled up and she just like walked in and poof, out came a baby and she was in the nicest room and had the nicest view and everything was good and Jesus never cried, you know. I'm sure glad that that's not what the first Christmas is about, because then all of us would be like, well, our Christmas is terrible. But we look at this one. We look at Mary's story. We look at the birth of the Son of God and we say, maybe my life is not as crazy as I thought. Maybe things are actually okay for me then too. Let's look at her story. Luke 2, 1 to 7 says, in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was the governor of Syria, and everyone went to their own town to register. I think it's important that Luke writes that. Luke's a doctor, and he doesn't like leaving out details, the author of this book. And he says, this is the first census of this kind. This is the first time that this was done. The reason he's saying that is he's saying this is not normal practice. This isn't something that Rome always did, but Rome was doing this for the first time in this place. And the reason he's saying that is because there's prophecies predating this 600 years that said the child that is the Son of God will be born in Bethlehem. And how was God going to get Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem? God was going to use the Roman governor. God was going to use the most powerful person in the land. And he was going to tell him to send Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem. And so Luke reminds us right away that though Mary's about to be in a challenging time, it was not because of Rome, but because of God. And God was going to say, you have to go back there to answer all the prophecies. And by the way, Rome doesn't rule here, I do. That's the Christmas story. God rules. Rome drools. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth to Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. And so Joseph, basically everyone just has to go back to their hometown so Rome can make sure that while they're taking advantage of these poor Jewish people and taxing them way too high, they just want to make sure that they're getting everyone that they're taking advantage of. They want to make sure that everyone that they are keeping under oppression is covered, that no one's getting a free pass. And so they get everyone back home. So Joseph and Mary are heading back to Mary's in-laws' house. They're heading back to the town that Joseph grew up in. Joseph has moved away. He's working somewhere. He's found this woman, and now he's pledged to be married to her. She is now carrying the child of God. I don't know how things have started working out with her family. We don't hear. Do her parents or her siblings or her friends, do they start to accept it? Like, okay, yeah, it's kind of weird, but probably is the Son of God in you, Mary, no problem. Or I don't know if they're walking in rejection regularly at this point, but this is, as far as we know, the first time that they're going to make the 120 to 140 kilometer trek back to Joseph's family. Mary's going to meet her in-laws. She's going to meet she's going for the hometown date. She's going with Joseph back to the place where he grew up, and it's at 9 months pregnant that they're going to do it. Imagine that moment. You're getting ready. Maybe she's had 6 months since she was at Elizabeth's house, and maybe they're getting the nursery ready. Can't wait for this baby. what's it going to be like? The Son of God is coming here. And even with, if it wasn't the Son of God, even without, she'd be excited, that first baby, you know, that first moment. Oh, I can't wait. What's it going to look like? What will his eyes look like? How will he behave? What will he sound like? What will he smell like? I can't wait to meet him. All of that stuff's going on. And then all of a sudden, Rome says, you have to go back to Bethlehem. 9 months pregnant. I don't know if you've ever been around someone who's 9 months pregnant, or you've ever been someone who's 9 months pregnant, but sometimes just like walking up the stairs is a challenge. You know, sometimes laying down is a challenge. I remember that with Kendall, as we've had three kids now, and just like, oh, I just got to roll over, and like sometimes I'm like pulling her arm, like, come on over here, you can make it. You know, every single thing is challenging. And Mary's like, okay, good, get on a camel, ride like 4 days across the sweltering heat, and potentially with all sorts of people trying to loot us, and then what? Go have a baby in a city that I don't know, with people that I don't know, and families that I don't know, and God, where are you? I thought this was your son, God. You're not going to take care of your son better? You're not going to take care of his mom better? You're going to make me at 9 months pregnant travel all the way across all of this land and go to some foreign place to us, and that's where this is all going to go down? Why aren't you taking care of us? Why don't you do something to help us? Why don't you tell Rome what they're going to do? Little did Mary know that he was telling Rome what to do, and this was actually answering all the prophecies that were supposed to come, that he was supposed to come from Nazareth and from Bethlehem. He was supposed to come from both of those places, and he has now in this moment. But Mary can't see that. So away they go. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger. That sounds normal to us now, but I just want you to capture that for a moment. Who of you would be happy to place your child in a manger? I've worked on a farm. I've seen mangers. Mangers are not usually clean places. They're not usually nice and tidy. They're not usually perfectly laid out. Most of us, when we have babies here in our culture, we want the cleanest. Like, I mean, there's a little spit up on that thing, and we throw it in the wash and get it all cleaned up and make sure we don't use certain types of detergents because that might affect our kids a little. Imagine hay, you know? Hay or drool or who knows what else is in this manger, and this is where Jesus is going to be laid because there was no guest room available for them. This was often translated, there's no room at the inn, but I like some of the newer translations that say there's no guest room available. The word there is kataluma. It means guest room. And when we think there's no room at the inn, we think that they're walking around and looking in every door, and Mary and Joseph are like, where can we get in? Oh, it's just a busy city. There's just so many people around. I can't believe it. Oh, well, and we'd often just look at that and say, well, it was just a full city. Like, yeah, no problem. They had to go and just stay in a stable and put their kid in a manger. But is there one person in this room who wouldn't give up your room for a woman in labor? Right? These two are still living the rejected life. Because that's not normal. This is a hospitality culture. In fact, Mary and Joseph probably didn't have to stay in a tent their whole trip to this place. Because in this culture, when you were traveling, people opened up their doors and let you in. Here they show up to Joseph's hometown and they're not let in. Often we just say, it doesn't mean anything. No, it means a lot. These are Joseph's people. These are Joseph's family. This is Joseph's relatives. This is Mary's parents-in-law and cousins-in-law and auntie and uncles-in-law and grandparents-in-law. And she's knocking on their doors and they're saying, sorry, I know you're in labor, but we've got no room for you. This is rejection. It's not coincidence. She's being rejected by her family, the mother of the Son of God. Imagine that. God, why am I still being rejected? Aren't I doing this for you? Aren't I carrying your child? Isn't this something, what's going on here. See, at that point, most of us are saying, God, would you just kick down the door? Would you just get these selfish people out of here? Show them. Send an angel to them like you did to Joseph. Show them that this is something more than just like an affair. Show them that I'm not just some woman who just got caught up in a relationship and now I'm pregnant. No, show them that this is the Son of God. Show them how important this is. Show them what's going on. Kick down the door, Lord. Get the guest room open for us. Let the inn be open for us. Help us get to the place where we'll be warm and taken care of and loved and looked after, because right now we're rejected and alienated and tossed aside and pushed out. Will you kick down the door? And I really believe that God laid on my heart that God doesn't always kick down the door. Sometimes he just comes and lies on your floor. That instead of kicking down the door and saying, here's a nice warm room, he says, hey, are you cold? I'll join you. Are you alienated? I'll come. Are you mourning? Let me join you. Are you rejected from your own family? I'll join you there. Often we think, I'll discover Christmas once God solves my problems. Mary didn't discover Christmas once God kicked down the door and let her in. She discovered it in the midst of the cold, nasty, stinky, whatever it was, stable or tool shed or cave or corner in the backyard. That's where Christmas happened for her. Christmas happened not when God treated her better than everyone else and made sure she had, or even equal to everyone else. It happened for her when God recognized that she was treated much worse than everyone else, and he joined her there. That's where Jesus came. Jesus didn't say, sorry, Mary, put me in the nice warm place. Maybe Mary's in-laws might have taken Jesus in. But God's saying, no, my son is going to be with the alienated, with the rejected, with the broken, with the cast aside. Some of us maybe are the people in the inns. Maybe some of us are the people with the guest hosts. Maybe some of us are the people with the opportunity to open the door, and we're looking at people and saying, ah, you don't quite fit. No, I don't really want you. Ah, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure if you, have you done some bad things? I'm not so sure. Who knows if it's not the mother of Jesus knocking on the door? Who knows if it's not an angel knocking on the door? And God doesn't go, well, Mary, you go into the tool shed. You go and live in the stable. You go and live in that barn, and I'm going to go in here. God says, Mary, if you're rejected, I'll be rejected with you. If you're pushed aside, I'm coming. I'm going to join you. That's Christmas. That's Christmas. That's good news for those of you who feel like you're walking through some devastation in your life. You're walking through some challenge in your life. Jesus doesn't say, shoot. Well, let's see if we can get in here. He just says, well, I'll come sleep with you. I'll come be in there with you. You can have my presence because I'm Emmanuel, God with you. I'll stand beside you. The same picture happens generations later. Well, not generations later, more like 30 years later, where the disciples, the followers of Jesus, are afraid on a boat because the storms are crashing, and all they want Jesus to do is calm the seas, and they look back and Jesus is sleeping. Jesus shows them afterwards that he could have calmed the seas. In fact, he does, but he's not there to calm the seas. He's sometimes not here to calm your seas or my seas. He's sometimes not here to crack open the inn door. He's sometimes not here to help other people accept you when they reject you. Sometimes he's just here to stand with you in those those rolling seas. He's just here to stand with you in your rejection, just here to stand with you in your brokenness, stand with you in your devastation. Sometimes he's not here to deal with your devastation, but to dwell in your devastation. And he wants to join you there. Worship team, you can come on up and join me. Luke 2, 16 to 20. This is right after the angels. I love that the first people that the angels go and tell is the shepherds. If you know anything about this culture, the shepherds were the rejected ones. like, hey, rejected ones. There's this other rejected group of people in a tool shed. The baby's in a manger. You should go see, because it's the Son of God. And the shepherds are going to go. So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in a manger. When they had seen him, they spread the word concerning what had been told them about the child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. Here's where Mary discovers Christmas. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. Mary finds treasure in the tool shed. Where have you decided that treasure is only going to be found at Christmas time? What situation have you decided has to be resolved before you're going to willingly see God as good? What reality have you said, God, until you change this, I will not see you. I will not discover you. I will not choose Christmas. I will not choose you in this season. God is saying to you, I'm not planning sometimes to change all of your circumstances. I'm planning on sitting with you while you go through them. Say, no, that's not for me. If it was for the mother of the Son of God, it's for you. Shouldn't he have done something better for Mary, if anyone? Shouldn't he have given her a better room, if anyone? Shouldn't he have treated her nicer, if anyone? But he said, Mary, you're going to sleep in the stables with the animals, rejected by your own husband's people. But I'll be there. And that's enough. The question is, would you rather be in your nice warm bed in the guest house, accepted by your in-laws, without God, or in the stable with them? Sometimes that's the choice. Sometimes that's our reality. No, I just want to solve all of these things. I want everything to feel a little bit better. And if I just sort of give up this thing, then it might be okay, and then we'll feel all right. Well, God's saying, no, don't fight so hard to get in the inn. I'll keep you warm in the manger. I'll keep you warm in the barn. My presence will be with you there. I'll look after you in that place. You're rejected by people. Yeah, but I'm going to be there. I'm rejected by people too. The story of Jesus, 33 years after this very moment, Jesus is going to be rejected by all people, and it was the best thing that's ever happened to our world. Yeah, but rejection is bad. That's not Christmas. Yeah, but devastation is bad. That's not Christmas. Yeah, well, hard times are bad. That's not Christmas. We think perfect tree, perfect snacks, perfect food, perfect family. Everything's good. Mary shows us messed up everything. Complete tragedy, wacko family. Complete terrible rooming situation. How was the food? Awful. Maybe it was hay. I don't know what they were eating. She's finding treasure, because there in the rejected place, the other rejects are showing up. And I want to tell you, if you feel rejected, if you feel forgotten or lost in this Christmas season, you're in good company, because the Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ, on the very first Christmas day, couldn't get in her in-laws' house when she was in labor. None of you would do that to a stranger, let alone a family member in labor. How broken must this situation have been? And yet, that's the situation God chose to put the very first Christmas story. What's yours? What's your story this year? Trying to put all the devastation back together, or are you inviting God into it? Are you trying to put all the mess and solve all the problems and answer everything so you can look like the family down the road, or are you inviting God into your situation now? Because Jesus is saying to you, maybe he's speaking to you, maybe there's a door you've been trying to kick down and you've been trying to get in the inn, you've been trying to just live like everyone else and not be noticed. Imagine people walking by, Mary and Joseph, there they are, like quietly having their baby in the, everyone hears what's going on. Everyone knows what's going on. These are the rejected people. These are the turned away people. These are the ones, there's Mary who acted this way. There's Mary who did that. There's Joseph who decided to stay with her. What is this family? Ooh, there's the Son of God. But then all of a sudden, they got shepherds showing up. Soon they're going to have wise men showing up. They got people showing up as guests to this tool shed, to this stable, to this cave, whatever it was, and saying, what? God. In fact, I can't wait to talk to you on Christmas Eve about how the stars, the universe, bowed to Jesus so that the wise men would find him. It's going to be good. So, I want to encourage you, and then I want to pray for you. If today you say, I've been trying to solve all my devastation rather than inviting God into it. It's not bad to try to solve your situation, but not without God. Recognize that your situation unsolved with Jesus in it is better than your situation solved without him. And so I just want to encourage you today. Do you have a situation that you need to invite Jesus into? On this Christmas season, do you have a barn that you need to welcome him into? Do you have a stable that you need to welcome him to join you in? Do you have a broken place in your life that's not fixed that you need to invite him into? Because it's when you do that that you will start to discover Christmas. Do you need to invite Jesus? Do you need to invite Christmas? Do you need to invite this moment into your stable? Because when Jesus showed up, Mary started finding treasure in her heart. I want you to find treasure in your stable, in your barn, in your cave, in your tool shed. So today, if you say, you know what, I just need you to pray for me, because I want to do that. I want to welcome Jesus into my stable. Why don't you just go ahead and raise your hand so I can pray for you? Is there anyone in here? Yeah, God bless you. God bless you. Yeah, God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. Anyone upstairs? Yeah, God bless you and God bless you. Come on. Lord, come on into my barn. Come on into my barn. Lord, we just welcome you. You've seen these hands, these people saying, I've got a barn. My barn is brokenness. My barn is broken finances. My barn is broken marriage. My barn is tragedy that I'm still walking through. My barn is the relationships that are shattered in my life. The stable that I'm living in is the feeling of rejection or betrayal from who I was closest with. And Lord, you see these hands today. God, I pray that instead of trying to kick down the door to the inn, these people would be discovering something new in you. They would be discovering that Jesus Christ can enter into their barn, into their cold situation, into their nasty situation, and right there he'll lie on the floor rather than kicking down the door. Jesus, thank you that you join us. Thank you that you're Emmanuel. You are God with us. Help us to see you. In Jesus' name we pray, and anyone who believes it says, amen. Amen. Well, God bless you all. Tomorrow is Christmas Eve, 3:30 or 5:30. Come to the side doors and join us. We've got a service following at 4 and 6. It's going to be amazing. Bring someone with you. It's going to be a fun time. We love you. Have a great day. Go invite Jesus into your barn.